The reason people don't scale is because they follow the flavor of the month instead of sitting down. And that's what I do in growth architecture. It's like, you want to build a house? Great. Where are we building it? How many people do need to live in it? Do you want a traditional? You want a modern? You want a contemporary? Is it going to be a cabin type of look? What are we building? And then once we know that, then we furnish it. And then you can get whatever other thing you have. But if you don't know what you're building, you can buy anything out there.
Yeah.
And it will not work because it has no coherence in the business.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Learn It All podcast. We are Damon Lemby and Darren Bridget. Damon Lemby, the CEO of Learn It. Darren Bridget, I'm in charge of our professional development product here at Learn It. And we are joined today by a very exciting guest, Beate Shillett. I got that pronunciation. I had to call it out for myself because I've been a little bit bad lately.
Been practicing.
I have been practicing.
Secretly practicing before the show.
Secretly practicing. Yeah, that's right. I do it throughout the day.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty happy to be here. I mean, shall we dive right in? We have a lot to talk about.
We do. We had a great conversation before the show. We always jump on about 15 minutes before the and we could barely stop before we got started. But let me welcome you and introduce you to our audience so they know a little bit about you. And then I'll ask you to tell us more about your really interesting background. You have this story where you started with $135,000 in debt as a single parent. You had a photography business. And within like 18 months, you sold this for millions of dollars to Bill Gates during a recession. You have built the Business Growth Architect show. You're a top 100 global thought leaders at PeopleHub. You have an award-winning Amazon bestseller, The Women's Code, Happy Woman, Happy World, one of 50 must-follow women entrepreneurs by HuffPost. The list goes on. And you're really active still today doing this kind of consultative work, helping organizations grow and develop and helping individuals grow and develop. Beate, what did I miss out? Probably a million things that you are also doing.
I don't know how you feel about this, but when somebody introduces you and then you see all your accomplishment or accolades, you go like, either I sound really accomplished or I sound really old. But it's probably a combination out of both. So no, I don't think you missed a lot. I mean, but in between that, I'm an 8-time disaster survivor. Little did I know there was going to add a pandemic to my ever-growing repertoire of things to overcome.
Yeah.
I think last year we had a hurricane in Los Angeles. So that was a whole other thing.
Yeah.
So I'm getting pretty close. I think I'm missing a volcano eruption at this point.
You know what? I'm going to add this to my resume because survivor of natural disasters and then like bullet list them out. I think that's not a bad.
It's a good tagline if you say 8-time disaster survivor because it implies resilience.
It does get people paying attention. And communication is actually another one of the big topics that you can talk about today.
Yes, for sure.
So welcome to the show. Thank you very much for being here. One of the questions that we like to ask people in the beginning is, because we're all about learning here, what's something that you are hoping to learn or get better at in the next 6 months or so?
Is it just one thing?
Yeah. And that is such a good answer. And that is the first time anybody has ever said that.
So here's a list. I have a list. The list is, so number one, I have to learn a dance with my husband because his daughter's getting married and he wants to dazzle the audience. Nice. So he doesn't want to do the regular, you know, left, right, left, right. He wants to do the sweeping movements. And it has been fallen up on me to find and we have the choreography and now I need to make him look good. Yeah. The other thing is I'm building with a partner, a SaaS company that is utilizing AI to evaluate resumes. So it's an add-on service to an HR process. So we're not in the HR business. We're in the resume evaluation business because we're seeing that people are now getting 400, 500, 800 resumes per job. because it's so easy to click a button on Indeed or Zoho that now the people that are evaluating resumes are completely overwhelmed. So I have to figure out how to build a SaaS company, utilize AI, all new technology.
Yeah.
Then I need to get better at investing. I facilitate in a high net worth individual group. And I got so inspired about how people talk about money and how comfortable they are that I decided I need to get better at it. So now I need to learn how to do real estate investment, understand crypto better, understand all these things so I can make better financial decisions with my investments, because what if I want to grow now? So that's just some of the things that are blatantly in my face right now. How much time do I have for this?
Well, that's the thing, right? I really appreciate what you're saying. And I think a lot of our listeners want to be able to say those things and maybe have a list of things that they really want to do, but it's actually doing them. You have a successful business. You have a podcast. You're probably out speaking. You're doing a million things already, and you want to learn these things. I always feel for so many folks that they must just feel overwhelmed when they think about trying to be a learn-it-all. How do you manage to keep your spirits up and accomplish these things and feel good?
Yeah, I think that's a really good thought or question to say, so I want to do all these things, but what's the reality of it? So the reality of it is that I have 24 hours in my day, like everybody else.
Yeah.
I am not a fan of planning every single minute of my day, because I feel that it stifles creativity and thinking and free flow of thought. Mm-hmm. And the best thoughts, you know, people always go and say, well, I had a great thought when I was singing in the shower. Now, you do not want me singing in the shower for your own protection, but you want me to have some time so I can go on a hike, I can go to the gym, I can listen to a crime show, which I find fascinating and very rewarding, because the bad guys get caught in the shows that I watch. Yeah. That somehow helps me to reestablish that the world is in order. But it relaxes me, so it allows my brain to do other things. I think it's about setting priorities. You have to decide what matters most and what matters most right now. So if I say, is what I said, the investing, learning to invest, is this a priority right now? Yes, it is a priority right now, because I am at a part of my career where I've gotten a lot of accolades. I certainly have the credibility. I've certainly done great projects. I've worked with amazing people. And there are a couple of things that are really important to me now. It's like, I cannot and do not want to work like this forever. So now I need to make my money work for me so that I can enjoy life even more than I'm already doing. And then if I want that, if that's a goal, then I need to have the action follow. So the organization that I facilitate, I'm now joining as a full member. So that was the first step. And then I'm going to join a group. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be part of that. So that's already in execution, because I decided that's important for me. The dancing, well, the wedding is coming in 6 weeks. So unless I want him to not have his desire fulfilled to dazzle the audience and the participants and the guests with his dancing skills, then I also need to be getting on this. So that was a priority this past weekend, where we picked the choreography and we're getting started in that. Other things are not a priority. Other things are long-term projects. So I cannot do them as diligently. My taxes are a priority right now. I'm already late.
Yeah.
So I think you always have to look at what really needs to get done. And then from the things that you want to do, where is my, I don't want to say ROI, because not everything is about numbers and dashboards and things like that, but what's my benefit and what's my desired benefit? And so that's how you prioritize. Mm-hmm. Now, if my house is a mess, which I can't stand, it may not be a priority.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we're dancing upstairs.
That's right. Yeah, that's good. I can see Damon has like a million questions you want to ask, but one more. So there's because you talk about overwhelm. I think it's in the title of
From Overwhelmed, your foolproof fix to get from overwhelmed to awesome.
Yeah, right. But when I hear you talk, certainly you're prioritizing, you're talking about what matters to you, but there's kind of a line between what feels exciting and what feels overwhelming. Or I guess I could say what feels whelming and what feels overwhelming. I always wonder why people don't say, oh, I feel so whelmed today, which is like I'm hitting the sweet spot. But so, because it probably is. Otherwise, you're just trying to clear everything out so you don't do anything and you just don't feel bad. Like there's that line, right, where it's exciting And it's kind of always maybe pushing overwhelmed, and you keep it in balance and keep it in check by prioritizing.
It's a definitely always a work in progress.
Yeah.
Yes, I feel often overwhelmed, but that's where the spiritual practice comes in.
Yeah.
And that's where the character development comes in, because that's what learning is about. Learning is about, who do I want to be today? How do I want to show up?
Yeah.
And I have a choice of my thought either being, I have so much to do, I don't know how I'm going to get it all done, to, here's a list of things I need to do. What's the most important thing that I need to get out of the way?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of reframing and clean thinking. How I really refer to it as clean thinking. Are my thoughts clean? Or am I allowing all this disruption and the negativity and politics and fear and recession? And sometimes when you go on apps or websites like Twitter or formerly or X now and or Nextdoor, right?
Yeah.
And you hear what people are saying, you go, oh my gosh, people have so much time to be so negative in the tone and how they talk to each other. And then I make a conscious choice to not participate, and I make a conscious choice that that's not where I want to be or how I want to show up. Yeah. Even though sometimes I want to just say the words, you are a moron.
Yeah. Well, I love that. And I love that expression, clean thinking. And also just the validation that, it's always a work in progress. And sometimes you do feel overwhelmed, but that's okay. It's a journey. And part of it is like you said, controlling what you're exposed to and accepting this idea of cleaning out your thinking.
I like what you say about reframing. You know, one of the things that I like to focus on is focusing on strengths over weaknesses. And in my research on you, you talk a lot about, I think it's the unapologetic value proposition. You know, can you speak a little bit about that and how that's helped you and the people you work with?
Yeah. So the unapologetic value proposition, you know, other people refer to it as the unique value proposition. I call it unapologetic for a reason. Mm-hmm. So I can sum it up sort of like the main sentence is, don't ever ask to be invited on a table that you're already sitting at.
Yeah.
Because people do this all the time. They go like, well, I have imposter syndrome. You know, I don't know if I have a right to be here. And I'm like, but you're already there.
Exactly.
Yeah. What are you apologizing for? And so the unapologetic value proposition is that we have to remember how we are trained to learn. And we are trained to learn. We go to school. Somebody gives us existing information. They tell us to learn existing information. They tell us to retain existing information. They tell us to repeat existing information. And then they give us an A. And then we go in the workplace and we walk into our boss's office and we say, where's the information? What can I learn? How can I repeat it? And then I'm going to get an A. And the boss says, what are you bringing to the table that nobody else does? And you go, what? Nobody mentioned that. Nobody talked about that. That wasn't in the playbook. So when we go into the real learning, into life learning, we still have this expectation that we have to follow the process that learning is, how learning is introduced to us, that there's rules we must follow. But in the real world, innovation is driven by us breaking the rules, stretching the rules, going outside the comfort zone, coloring outside the lines, or rearranging what's in the box. And people are deathly afraid of that. So that's what people are trying to reconcile, I think, when they have imposter syndrome, is that there is this somebody sees something in them, but they still have this old anchor that they're dragging around on how they think it's supposed to be done, but they're naturally, innately doing something different because that's their super skill or an amazing thing that they're bringing to the table, and then they apologize for it. And so the unapologetic value proposition just says, stop it. Mm-hmm. Just stop it. So when somebody has you at the table, you have a right to be there. And if you are voicing your opinion, you voice your opinion. And if somebody says something really outrageously stupid, then this is what you do. And I teach this and you do exactly that. I can demo it. You put your head back, you open your mouth, and you go, oh my God, David. Oh,
yeah.
Good one. So what I was saying.
I love it.
That's good.
And you go right back to what you were saying.
Yeah.
That person will never interrupt you again.
Yeah. Yeah, good. And that's such a fascinating connection. to talk about imposter syndrome and actually thinking about what's the surprising value that you bring. You're already there. What's the surprising value? And I was literally thinking about it just the other day that it's so easy to forget that it's the differences that are things that make you, that's what you bring. And they're not all going to be equally appreciated or whatever, but if you don't have any differences, you don't show up with anything. I was thinking about it in a personal level because I started out as an actor for a long time. If I could go back and talk to my young actor self, I would have leaned into that so much harder. Like actually seek out the things about you that are different, even if they don't seem like they're the things that everybody is expecting. But it's those differences that are the only thing that anybody's really going to be interested in. Otherwise, you're just the same as everybody else.
Yeah. And people always say that be you because everybody else is taken. And then you go like, what the heck is that supposed to be?
Yeah,
and it makes no sense until you eventually get to the point. And I think as you get older in your career, it just becomes much easier because you recognize that no matter where you are, that people still have the same sense that say, I don't even know how I got here. Or I mean, I guess I was at the right time at the right place. People tend to not give themselves the credit that they deserve. Yeah. And as you get older, you just don't care because you have cellulite, you have wrinkles, and your body is not as hot as it used to be. You're not the thing with the hot idea. You're just one with many ideas, but you bring the experience, and then they're discounting that. So at some point, you're just going to have to say, well, I certainly earned my right to be here. And sometimes when somebody is the moron, I say, I earned my right to speak.
It's good.
And at the end of the day, I feel like sometimes we just care too much what other people think anyways.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just something that, you know, I work with a lot of people and say like, how do you stop comparing yourself to somebody else? And it's one of the ways is just stop worrying about people have their own lives and they have their own things to think about. And who cares so much what they think, right?
The only thing that they're worried about is what you think about them.
Exactly. And how it affects or benefits them. That's it.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. I also find that humor always helps.
Yeah.
That if you can laugh it off, or if somebody says something, instead of being upset about it, just say, Darren, I believe I just said that 5 minutes ago, but I loved your reframing. I'm glad you hooked on to the idea. So you brought it back up. So you see this idea that I just had 5 minutes ago, it's already taking hold.
Yeah.
Thank you, Darren. Yeah. Thank you for your contribution to my idea.
You know, I told you that I have 10 towards neurotic. So now I've just been chalking up all the things I'm waiting for you to do during the middle of this talk, which is throw your head back and laugh. And then, okay, that was me.
You have to admit that's such a good strategy.
It's a great strategy.
Yeah.
Somebody calls it the checkmate move.
Yeah. Humor is a really good one. I wanted to do a humor class for us in business because it can be challenging for people and people don't always do it well. I mean, humor never is, I just don't want to pay attention if it's mean. But if there's not meanness to it, it can be such a great thing. But it's hard. People are afraid in the workplace to use humor. And it seems to me like you actually really lean into it a lot.
Constantly, because I have to call people out all the time. I mean, I'm a business growth architect. I help people to overcome their own stuff. Yeah. So when they come up with stuff, I have to challenge them on that. But I have to find a balance between calling them out. And I call it sometimes, I use a method called temper tantrum. So when somebody really doesn't get it or they keep falling back into this, I literally put my stress ball squishy down. I look them square in the eye and I say, that's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to call you on this right now.
Yeah.
Because that's not what we talked about. That's not what you agreed upon. That's not what you said. Because what I'm hearing you do is revert right back to the stuff that was a month ago after we decided that we were going to change. Mm-hmm. So should we talk about the psychology of change and help you to understand that your subconscious is now boycotting the actual change and is trying to go back to safety to the misery that you were in before. So maybe now we need to address that. So I think that also is part in communication or in leadership or in learning to have that honesty and not mince words. I don't have the time to work with you for 5 years. I might be retiring in 5 years.
Yeah.
So I have an allocated amount of time that I dedicated to this. And you hired me to give you a result. So let's go do that.
Yeah.
You find that the customers you work with have a hard time scaling because of their aversion to change?
I actually find most people just don't know how. So there's something I use, and it's kind of like what they say and what you think it is. So a lot of times, subject matter experts, when I hear you say something, in my head, I want to say, yeah, that's what you say, but that's not what it is. What it really is that.
Yeah.
And so we immediately have this friction between what you think it is and what I know it is. Mm-hmm. And so we can't solve anything because you're going to fight me on this because it's not your understanding. Mm-hmm. I have to remember that I'm the subject matter expert, that I know as a matter of fact that this, what you're saying, is not the problem, that it is something else. But if I tell you, I immediately shut you down. Mm-hmm. So it is my job to tell you what you need to hear so that you can pull the trigger so that I can really help you uncover what the real issue is. Mm-hmm. That's why people don't know how to scale, because they go to this internet insanity currently where whatever, the Russell Brunsons and the Brendan Burchards and the Gary V's and the Alex Hormozis and whoever is the flavor of the month are out there and they're promoting in high scoring headlines and ethical persuasion your pain point so that you pull a trigger to learn something. And then surprisingly enough, the thing that they sell happens to be the exact solution to every single problem you have.
Yeah, right.
So it's amazing to me.
Right.
Only to be followed by an affiliate offer from somebody who now offers the thing that while you did that, you figured out that you're still missing. So if you learn how to speak, mm-hmm. then you need to still figure out how to get on stages. And then you still need to figure out on how to have an offer for the audience. And then you still need to sell them an online course. And then you still need to get lead generation. And you still need to create traffic. And you still need to create funnels. And $100,000 later, 2 years later, you still have no business. The reason people don't scale is because they follow the flavor of the month instead of sitting down. And that's what I do in growth architecture. It's like, you want to build a house. Great. Where are we building it?
Mm-hmm.
How many people do need to live in it? Do you want a traditional? You want a modern? You want a contemporary? Do you want a flat roof? You want an angled roof? Are we putting solar on it? Are we having a basement? How many floors? Is it going to be a cabin type of look? What are we building?
Yeah.
And then once we know that, then we furnish it. And then you can get whatever other thing you have. But if you don't know what you're building, you can buy anything out there.
Yeah.
And it will not work because it has no coherence in the business.
I'm picturing all these horrible little Franken homes all over the place assembled by internet. So you kind of figured some of this out for yourself because you went and we didn't really properly give you the opportunity to tell your story a little bit for our listeners. So because you're in debt, you've got a photography business, you start out very creative and then you were able to scale your business and grow and sell it. So can you describe how you overcame some of these hurdles in your own life? What's your story there?
I mean, I don't know if it was stupidity or audacity or resilience or a combination out of all three of them.
Yeah.
I think what's important to say, so people say, well, why'd you leave Germany? Why are you in America? So there are two versions of this. The one version that I just started talking about really this year is I have a lot of trauma in my childhood and I really needed to get away from my mother as far as I could. And I picked the other side of the planet and it's been a good decision for me to do so. The other version that I had been telling for whatever the last 30 years is that I wanted to find adventure and I haven't had a boring day since. And both versions really are true in their own way. But I always felt that I had a mission of some sort, that I was here to teach, to educate, to have a story that I could tell and then inspire others. I remember I was at an event by the National Association of Women Business Owners and I hear this woman speak. And to this day, I remember the story that she told. And I remember I said, I understand. I first have to have a story so that I can be on stage and then tell my story. And then I have people in the audience that will have the same reaction that I have to her. And that has been something that was really super important to me. And to this day, I was in Chicago. Somebody flies across the room, throws themselves in my arms and says, oh, my God, I love you. You're amazing. I'm like, do I know you?
Yeah.
And she says, no, but I spent 3 days with you because I took your course. And if it wasn't for you, you changed my life. Or, I went and I'm on the advisory board for an organization called Women in Technology Hollywood. And then this one woman says, were you speaking in Silicon Valley 4 years ago? I said, I was. And she says, oh my God, you changed everything for me. And I knew exactly what talk she was referring to. I said, so did you ask for the raise? And she says, yes. I said, did you get it? And she said, three times.
Wow. Nice.
Right. So that really is the backstory to that. And then I set out to do it. I had no idea. I was laid off. I married a pathological liar, an alcoholic. I found myself as a single mom in a country not my own with no idea what's what, how to do it. One disaster after the other. I'm in a lawsuit because I had a bad employee who came up with a business, which was my business without me, between her and my key vendor. Sued them, you know, deep in debt, trying to figure out how I'm going to survive this lawsuit. I have a production business with $500,000 of work on the books. September 11th comes, wipes it out in one day. It was over in one day, literally 24 hours, my business was done. And then the lawsuit settles. I pay everything off. I pay my debt, pay the attorney. It's zero. I started with zero all over again. Yeah. And then I have to go and build this new business, dog photography business, but I have no money. And so I'm in debt, $135,000. I have a great idea. People really reacting favorably to it. It was about architecture, interior, a lot of celebrity homes. So if you've ever looked at a magazine and you saw Madonna's house or Julian Moore's house or Francis Ford Coppola's ranch, those were images that we provided. Mm-hmm. And we sold them worldwide, but I had no money. I go to Germany. My father has a stroke. My father did not have a stroke. My father had pancreatic cancer. So my dad dies in 6 weeks. So now I'm at the grave with no money at a funeral I can't really pay for. And I fell on my knees. I raised my fist and I yelled at God. And I said, if you have a plan, this would be a very good time to fill me in, because it just didn't, I couldn't fathom, right? I couldn't fathom that I was a good person. I don't lie. I don't steal. I definitely have done a lot of character development. At least I like to think so. And I couldn't understand that at the end of the day, you know, somebody would stand there and say, nah, 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 nah. The joke is, it just was inconceivable to me.
Yeah.
And then I surrendered and I said, fine, I go back. I call the bankruptcy attorney and that's just that. And I come back, I get a letter from the White House not too long later. And I had written in my desperation and because a very nagging former mother-in-law to write a letter to the president, I get a letter from the White House. It puts me in touch with the Small Business Administration. They help me restructure my debt in a 10-year fixed loan. 3 months later, I'm break even. 18 months later, I'm the leader in my category in the world. And that's when a Bill Gates company comes and says, can you tell us how you do it? Like any decent woman, I said, you want what I have, you pay for it. Yeah. And they made me a multimillion dollar offer. And that's how I sold my business.
That is a great story.
That is a great story. Talk about overwhelmed when you were at the bottom and $135,000 in debt, lost your $500,000 deal when it came to around September 11th. How did you pull yourself out of that? What was like just like the first step? The first step, because sometimes you find that when all that comes crashing down, your father dying, it's hard to just, where do I start?
Faith. I think that at that point, I had done everything I could do. So I knew that. Mm-hmm. I had called everybody. I'd taken every trip. I put all my money that I had, mm-hmm. money that I didn't have. I put it all out. There was no more money. I had to borrow money to pay interest on borrowed money. I mean, I was in the death spiral of finance. Mm-hmm. This was coming to an end. There was nothing else I could do. No other risk I could take. Nobody else to call. Nobody else to visit. This was it. The only thing I had left was full surrender. Mm-hmm. That's it. And I was okay with whatever was going to happen. If it wasn't going to work, then, I mean, at least I'm not drowning in a puddle. I'm drowning in the ocean.
Yeah. I heard that in my research, drowning in a puddle. You don't want to drown in a puddle.
Yeah.
Not worth it.
So it's interesting though, because that feeling of surrender is so cinematic almost. The whole story is really is really remarkable.
Maybe one day we'll have a movie.
And, yeah, I think
we all go watch it.
Yeah, we should do the movie. But you were still open and capable. It's like you didn't, it's almost in that moment, you didn't write a new story that you had to go live. You took what opportunities presented itself. So when you had that opportunity to restructure your loans or the bankruptcy, you, it gave you just enough purchase to keep moving forwards. Like you were open in that moment, as opposed to like completely shut down. So I feel like surrender means something different to you than I feel like it might mean to a lot of other people.
If I would have given up, my mother would have been right, and I would have rather died.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that, you know, let's just be really honest here about some of these motivations.
Yeah.
I was not going back to Germany, and yeah, I was not going to prove her right.
Yeah.
I wanted to prove myself right.
Right.
And
right.
So I was, I think there's a lot about this where, you know, we always talk about ego and passion, and people need to be aware that there's a very fine distinction that you can be passionate about something, or it could be your ego that's determining something.
Yeah.
I was passionate about the business, and I'm very passionate about creatives, and I'm very passionate about non-conforming people, crazy people with big ideas. I help them land planes because nothing excites me more than a big, fat, crazy idea. It's like, can I build a business around? I can build a business just around anything. And that really was meaningful to me. But on my ego, I had to prove something to my mother.
Yeah.
And when I let that go and I said, well, I may not be able to prove anything to anybody other than that my way does not work, and I surrendered that, then the path appeared.
Mm-hmm.
But if you would have told me that a letter to the president that I only wrote because my ex-husband's mother, a former mother-in-law,
yeah,
was constantly nagging me about this. I mean, who writes a letter to the president of the United States? Right. I mean, come on.
Mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Let's just not say that. What a stupid, idiotic idea that was until it wasn't.
Until it worked.
That's a really interesting distinction. I think, but you know, we don't have too much time here, but I want to hear just a little bit about this is not doing it service. I think we need to have you come back another time, but you have so much to say on so many other topics, including the focus that you put on helping women in the workforce in their professional and personal lives. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about what the motivation was for you there, and then we can pick it up some other time.
Yeah. I think the big thing about women is that because of my abuse by the hands of another woman, I certainly want to equip women with the tools to make something out of themselves no matter what.
Yeah.
And in my research, and as I was embarking on that, I found that women are their own biggest enemy themselves, that women don't support other women because they oftentimes don't have trust, because a lot of them have, like I do, mothers that are difficult, to say the least,
mm-hmm,
or that they've been, you know, in middle school, girls in middle school is a disaster. There's so much bullying. I mean, it's just unbelievable how quickly this happens.
Especially right.
Middle school for girls is horror.
Especially these days, social media.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh. And the suicide and mental instability based on that 100%. So I wanted to go out there and teach women what it's like to have a code, because men have a code on whatever we want to, you know, a men's code, the bro code, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I call it an old business code because it's just the way things have been done forever and ever and ever. And when in doubt, go back to that old business code. And we will only see change in women leadership, or making room for leadership for more diverse candidates, if we pull together and we recognize that there are innate differences in the way we lead. And one of the things that to me was so instrumental is when you tell your boss that you're pregnant, it's almost like it's the first time they ever heard about a woman getting pregnant. Or it's like an absolute shock to them. You're like, but you have four children at home. Was this a surprise to you that women have, you know? But we still have conversations today. We're in the year 2024 at the time of this recording. And you're shocked that women have babies, or that we are responsible for the procreation and the survival of the human race. You should be celebrating when I'm telling you I'm pregnant. So I think there's also an inherent guilt that women have because we don't have a code, where we don't support each other, and where we immediately go to a negative state. And that's why I wrote the Women's Code and Happy Woman, Happy World, because I wanted to give women a very clear outline on how to take responsibility for your own actions first and build this collaborative environment so that more and more women are coming together and helping each other instead of taking each other down.
It's a fabulous pursuit, and I look forward to reading it before our next conversation. Beate, something we like to ask people towards the end of the sessions here is, we've learned a lot about you, especially here at the end, and actually throughout the whole conversation with all the great ideas and stuff, but also your personal story. We've learned some of the things that you want to work on, including the dancing. What is something that people, a lot of people maybe don't know about you that they might find surprising? I actually feel like that's going to be the tougher question for you to answer. But again, you're only speaking to our audience, so they, let's assume they just met you.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that people find surprising about me, you know, I have a very soft, squishy heart. And while I had to be very tough a lot of times in my life and not let up what was really going on, but I definitely have intense feelings about things, but I learned how to manage, you know, my logical thinking. And in Myers-Briggs, I'm an ENTP, to really understand on how to do that. I think today, because I had to be so much in the thinking part in my life to figure out what the strategy and the solution is, and being German and having that somehow, I think it's in my DNA, is to really pay attention to making it about people, how people feel, choosing your words wisely, double checking on whether you really need to say that, and giving yourself that 24-hour time period to go back and say, am I going to really say it like that? Can I say it like that? How are people going to react to it? Being clear in the communication of, and the way I mean this is in this context, right? That's really something I pay a lot of attention to. How do I articulate and formulate something so I get the response that I desire?
It's great. It's that, you know, that how Germans are a coconut culture compared to a peach culture. Have you heard this one before?
No, a coconut culture. Do tell.
Yeah. So it's kind of like how you, it's part of how you build relationships with people. So you can build relationships more task-based or more relationship-based. You can be more low context or high context. But there's also this other component, which is cultures where people are a little bit tougher on the outside. But then once you invest the time and you really get to know them, they tend to have kind of like deeper, more meaningful, more authentic, open. Americans tend to be thought of as peaches. Like, we sort of share, you know, here's the medication I'm on and here's all my mental illnesses. But at a certain point, you don't really develop a very authentic relationship beyond that. It's kind of more smiley. We do a lot of smiling with our teeth here in the US, is what I'm told.
I think there's a time and a place for all of this, but yes, I understand what you mean. And I believe that that is really true. But in learning or in leadership and learning, that to me is the best part about it, because if I have somebody who is soft and fuzzy, somebody who's immovable and feels like they have no emotion, somebody who's overly emotional, then I know exactly on how I need to show up as a leader, or what I need to teach so that I can find that path to have everybody get something out of it and be honest about it and not discount something that's different than mine. So I think within that is really the fabric that I find so fascinating. That's why I love working with creatives, because it just adds this layer of surprise. And it's like, ooh, that was good. Say that again. Yes.
That's great. It is fabulous talking with you. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Yeah. So the first thing I recommend all of you to do is, if you are having a skill set and you want to know what your talent is worth, go to a quiz that I did. It's called whatsyourtalentworth.com. And just go to whatsyourtalentworth.com. And in a couple of minutes, I'll give you an actual number so you know on whether or not where you are at and how you're being compensated, what that talent is really worth in this market. Surprisingly accurate, I might say myself. Reach out. Don't be a stranger. Drop into my DM. While we're at it, please, wherever you pick up the Learn It All podcast, go there right now and give it a 5-star review. Leave a comment below wherever you are watching this right this very minute. One takeaway, and the reason this is so critical right now, is because everything is run by AI, and AI measures one and one thing only, and that is engagement. So be engaged. Help Damon and Darren to reach more people, even more people, I must say. And just go ahead and help them, give them a little bit of the love back. And that's it. You know, just available everywhere as Growth Architect or Beate Schlett. Drop in my DM, mention the show, and happy to explore how I can help you.
Fantastic. Look at that. We're already getting comments. Beate, thank you so much. On behalf of Learn It, it was terrific. Can't wait to do it again.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.